Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 289, recorded April 4th, 2016. 16. Still, it's still 16. Just check in.
Oh, you know what? Before we... Well, tell who we have first. Then I have an announcement.
Okay, yes. It's kind of fun.
A funny announcement.
We have Matt in Perth, Western Australia, and we have two YouTubers. We have Austin from YouTube and Connor from YouTube.
Yep. Okay, I've got an announcement. I'm ready to make it.
Tell us your announcement.
Okay. So, I had a Daphnia culture for a long time. I had it for years. For I don't know how many years, but a number of years. And it did really well. I'd keep it outside from March to October, bring a jar or two inside, culture them inside in the winter, and then I put them back outside. They did really well like that. We moved to a different place where we didn't have a backyard, and I cultured them in an aquarium. They didn't crash even once. Did fine for the slightly over 2 years, right, that we lived there?
About not quite 2 years.
Or was it not quite 2 years? Okay, that makes sense. Anyway, not quite 2 years that we lived there. Did fine. Strange thing about this particular culture is that I couldn't get the epipia or the resting eggs ever to hatch. Tried experiments with several aquariumaxers where I'd send them eggs and they'd try to get them to hatch. I tried to get them to hatch. I tried freezing them. I tried doing all these things. Couldn't get them to hatch. But the culture itself seemed nearly bulletproof. Okay. So then we moved here last June and... For some reason, even though I tried to be very careful with the culture, and it was only without aeration for this car ride, it's like a half an hour, 45-minute car ride.
It's not a very long car ride.
Not a very long car ride. Excuse me. And I got the air running right after, and the colony seemed to be doing fine, and then within a week, it was all dead. Not a single Daphnia left. I was quite disappointed. But I left some water in there at all times, just in the hope that something would happen. What do you know? Today, I walked by the culture and looked inside, and there's a single Daphnia. After the water had frozen solid and everything, and that's not too surprising. The surprising thing is that the resting eggs worked at all, because before they hadn't. So I'm really hoping that the single Daphnia will start reproducing, and that pretty soon I will have a thriving culture again. I'm pretty excited that there's even one in there.
We were pretty surprised.
Yeah. So there you go. That's my surprise of the day.
It's a good surprise. I'd rather have a happy surprise than a not happy surprise.
Exactly. All right. So let's move on to Matt.
Yes.
In Perth, Western Australia.
And he greets us in French today. He says, "Bonjour, Kelly and Russ." I suppose at the time of day that we're filming to respond, we should say bonsoir.
Yeah, but when he wrote it, undoubtedly it was
bonjour. Bonjour. I'm going to get the sad news out of the way early in this email to move on to the much happier news. My spotted mandarin died. Oh no. And released a whole bunch of toxins into the aquarium. All mandarins have this ability, but this was the first time I have experienced it. It killed Nemo, the two blue-green chromis. And the four peppermint shrimp I had in there. Interestingly, it did not harm the corals, starfish, snails, or the anemone.
That is interesting.
That was a sad day. That is sad.
Yes.
He says, however, I actually felt good about it later as it meant I could stop feeding the tank. Fish food is the main source of nutrients in the aquarium. The green algae eventually got to the point where it was a problem and was beginning to overrun the aquarium. Stopping the feeding meant I could slow down the algae growth. What I have learned from this experience is do not put shy fish with boisterous fish. All of my mandarins have been shy and do not regularly seek out the brine shrimp. That meant sometimes the spotted mandarin would not get any food and the blue-green chromis would eat all of it up. I said that wrong again, didn't I? Chromis.
Chromis is how I've usually heard it.
Okay. Nemo could hold his own, but the spotted mandarin would be lucky to have food come his way. I suspect the lack of easy food contributed to the spotted mandarin's downfall. On the positive side, this tragedy gives me a chance to reset my inhabitants.
I am sorry to hear about the losses. That's a lot of losses, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree that it probably is lack of food that contributed or probably the main issue there is that it is hard to keep spotted mandarins fed, especially when there are very, aggressive eaters in the tank with it.
Mm-hmm. So. Okay. Okay, now on to the happier news. I have now set up my new 180-liter, 90x45x45cm marine aquarium. By the way, if you want to do an easy conversion from metric to imperial, just divide the liters by 4. 1 U.S. gallon is actually 3.8 liters, but 4 gives you a good enough rough estimate. So 180-liter becomes roughly 45 gallons. About 15 kilograms, or approximately 30 pounds, of new dry rock, and arrange them nicely in the aquarium. When using dry rock, you do not need to cycle it for a month. Nothing needs to die off. All that has to happen is the bacteria needs to replicate itself. I added a block of brine shrimp to give them something to nibble on. In biology, there's something called mean generation time. And I bet it doesn't mean the amount of time it takes for one generation to become mean.
No. I like that.
Although I bet that amount of time would be much less time than the amount that takes a generation to become nice.
That's probably true.
Sad. Okay. This is the average amount of time it takes for the bacteria colony to double in size. A lot of bacteria have an MGT of 10 minutes. So within a few days, there can be billions of them in my 180-liter aquarium. I added all my coral after a few days of dosing the 180-liter aquarium with mature bacteria solution. Here's the key bit. I did not put any of my old live rock in the new aquarium. That way, none of the phosphate and nitrates that the rocks absorbed get transferred to the new setup. I gently eased the anemones off of the rocks they were attached to. This was surprisingly easy. All I had to do was get my fingernails under one edge, then slowly pull it off. Anemones feel like small jellyfish.
Yeah, I've actually touched anemones on occasion. They have a strange feeling to them, but that makes sense. So, about the mean generation time, I've actually read an article, and I don't know if it's an authoritative article or not, but I read an article that stated that lithotropic bacteria, like the ones that take care of ammonia and nitrates and so on, or chemolithotropic, which one is it? Anyway, that sort of bacteria has a much slower mean generation time than a lot of other bacteria, so
that's why it takes this, so long to cycle?
What this particular article said. Yeah, and it was explaining that. It said in freshwater, it can take 8 hours. The mean generation time is something like 8 hours, which is a lot longer than most bacteria we're familiar with when we're talking about, like, you know, E. coli is something like 8 minutes. And then I think it said freshwater. I mean, saltwater is even slower.
Interesting.
And that may be why, cycling takes so long. But anyway, I don't know for sure if this article was correct or not, but I just remember reading that. So
that's interesting.
Something to think about. Mm-hmm. Another thing to think about for the bacteria, you might want to consider using like ammonium chloride, because when you add brine shrimp, certainly, they produce food for the bacteria, but they also are going to generate some phosphates as they decompose, or release phosphates as they decompose. Whereas if you add ammonium chloride, you're going to be feeding the correct bacteria, but you won't be adding phosphates to the system. So that's one thing to think about anyway.
That's a good idea. Okay, it says now my week-old 180-liter aquarium looks stunning. No algae is visible. I bought a hanging light stand for my 60-centimeter marine light. The light is hanging about 15 centimeters, or 6 inches, above the water, which increases its spread to cover the extra 15 centimeters on each end. The aquarium is so much more accessible now. I can easily reach down into the aquarium without hitting a rock formation or nudging the light. I cannot stress enough how frustrated I would get having such a cramped, delicate system before. Now it is a breeze to move a coral or rock around. That sounds nice.
Yeah.
The top of the tank has two short rails of glass used to hold up the lid. I do not use the lid, so I don't need them. I am going to remove the short ones so I can attach a protein skimmer and media reactor to the side of the aquarium. The rails along the 90-centimeter edge of the aquarium will stay intact as they are structural. Once the filtration is in place, I will start slowly adding fish again. Do you have any fish suggestions now that I'm starting over? Do any of the listeners have suggestions? Matt.
Okay. Well, fish suggestions.
For the marine?
Yeah, I'm wondering, as you mentioned before, that you were getting a lot of nutrients in the tank that was causing the algae to grow. I wonder if it might be a good idea to build up the invertebrate side of things, the photosynthetic invertebrates first.
Before you add fish?
Before you add fish, and get them to grow quite a bit. And once you've gotten them to grow quite a bit so that they're pulling a lot of nutrients out of the system, then you could maybe add a couple of small fish. I don't know. It's worth a thought. I know that some people keep basically invert-only reef tanks, and most of them being photosynthetic.
I don't think those are as interesting.
They can be stunning, but it's nice to have some fish in there. But I'm just thinking, if you're worried about algae being a problem, then in the same way that a heavily planted tank can handle, you know, most of the nutrients from a fairly low bioload of fish, that the saltwater tank might be kind of the same. Although I have less experience with saltwater tanks, I have heard of people who have tanks that are very heavy on the photosynthetic invertebrates, very low on food that they add to the system, and they just have a few fish in there, enough to, you know, add some movement and a dynamic element to the tank, but not too many, and that the tanks do pretty well that way. But once you get past a certain bioload, it's a lot harder to deal with that kind of thing, so you tend to have algae and things like that. So anyway, but I'd like to put some put that out, as Matt was saying, put out the if there are any listeners out there who have suggestions for Matt's tank, please chime in.
Okie doke. Let's go to Austin from YouTube. He says, one of my fish has gotten Popeye. Well, I'm pretty sure that's what it's called, but anyway, I was wondering how I can cure it.
So I asked Austin a couple of questions. First of all, whether both eyes were distended and whether the scales were sticking out or the body was swollen. Because I've had fish injure an eye, and then it swells up, and then the eye itself you know, recedes back and looks fine and does well, and the fish is fine. Mm-hmm. But if you have both eyes popping out, and especially when you have you know, swelling in the body cavity and you have the scales poking out, that's usually a really bad sign. Mm. So it means you've got fluid buildup in the body cavity based on various things. Sometimes it can be mycobacteriosis, which we all know is like the bane of
everybody's existence.
It's an awful thing to have to deal with. And it can be other things. It can be kidney failure caused by other things too. But at any rate, it's a buildup of fluid in the system. It's pretty dangerous. Prognosis is not good when that happens. And I asked him, and he said, yeah, both eyes are popping out and there are scales sticking out. So I directed him to a link from the Aquarium Fish magazine, fishchannel.com. There's some things you can do to help. Sometimes you can use Epsom salts to help reduce the swelling, things like that. But if it is mycobacteriosis, you can't really cure mycobacteriosis easily. There are antibiotic regimens you can do with specific antibiotics that work on that type of bacteria, but it's really not an easy thing to handle. And by the time you're that far along, usually the fish is not going to survive too long. So, sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but you can certainly look at the link, Fish Channel. If you do a link search for Fish Channel and Dropsy, it will come up, and that can help. Sometimes it will help reduce the swelling, and if the fish is not suffering from mycobacteriosis, sometimes the swelling can be reduced to a point where the fish will eventually recover from whatever issue is causing it. Mm-hmm. But I've rarely had fish recover from such things, unfortunately.
So that's a sad one.
It is.
Should we do Connor from YouTube?
Mm-hmm.
Says, do you still have red-tailed fairy shrimp? Do you know whether it would be possible to keep a tank running continuously, perhaps by siphoning out eggs, drying them, and dropping them back in the tank for hatching?
So this is in reference to a video I did some years ago about some red-tailed fairy shrimp, which are vernal pool organisms like triops, not predatory like triops, but they look very much like brine shrimp in some ways. They swim a little differently and they have a different appearance and their tails are red. So they're freshwater creatures, and I raised some a while ago and did this video of them. Well, I don't have any right now, but the question of doing a continuously running tank is an interesting one. It is possible to do it. I have experimented with multi-generational tanks of vernal pool organisms, not specifically this species, but in theory it would work. By siphoning out some eggs, usually siphoning out some detritus and substrate, including some eggs, not very much of it, and then drying that for maybe a couple of weeks. And then rather than dropping them back into the main tank, what I would do is put them in a nursery tank with distilled water or RO water, because the large amount of minerals, well, relatively large amount of minerals that will have built up in the mature tank with the adult shrimp in there will tend to discourage the eggs from hatching. I'm not saying none of the eggs will ever hatch, but the hatch rate will be poorer. But if you use a nursery tank with distilled or RO water, it simulates rainwater, which stimulates the cysts to hatch. And once they've put on a week or so of growth, you can slowly acclimate them to the adult's water by degrees, adding drops of the adult's water into the nursery tank and removing some of the nursery tank water until the mix is, pretty much the same as the main tank, and then you can switch them over. And I've done that with triops and so on, and it seems to work fine. So that's the method I would recommend using. And the red-tailed fairy shrimp don't live an extraordinarily long time, so I would say every month or so you could hatch a new batch and put a few in, put some babies in, and then you should have a continuous tank going. You will, of course, need to do periodic water changes on the adult tank and so on, but if you want to keep a tank going, that's a feasible way to do it based on my experimentation, which has run a few generations, I guess, something like that, and it seems to work. So
okay,
yep, that's about it, I think.
I think that's everybody.
Yep, I'll let you know how my Daphnia keep going. Hopefully they'll keep going. Hopefully by next time we have an episode, we'll have a crop of Daphnia from that lone survivor that seemed to hatch. And I think that's all for now, so
may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.